The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
It's been a year of quickly evolving and ongoing conflict, with war creeping up in its third year in Ukraine, over 1 year in Gaza, and a surprise end to the war, which was a long-running civil war in Syria with the ousting of Bashar al-Assad. There's been no shortage of global conflict, and in the weeks and months ahead, how are these likely to play out? We're joined now by John Simpson, BBC World Affairs Editor. John, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
Good. Now, I want to talk about the collapse of Damascus and how quickly it happened. Were you expecting that something like this could happen?
No, I have to say I didn't have any expectation of it. And I'm not alone. It's clear that neither the CIA nor the British MI6 nor the Israelis had any notion that this was going to happen. It was brilliantly planned at a time when Syria's allies had their minds on other things. The Russians, obviously, in Ukraine, Iran, in Lebanon, and nobody thought that something like this might happen in Syria. So brilliantly done, and so sudden that it just took everybody by surprise, not just me.
I mean, there are parallels where such events happen, and you can go back to October the 7th in Israel and the lack of intelligence about what was about to unfold in that country and what happened thereafter as a direct result. But you can go back to the Ceausescu's and the fall of that regime in Romania, which was a surprise to everyone, including the Ceausescu's.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was one international expert on Romania whom I knew and contacted beforehand. This would have been about 8 days, I think, before the revolution broke out. And he said, no, I think, you know, the times are going to be difficult for the Ceausescu's, but I think anything is going to happen. It'll take 5 years before it does. And I think the same thing, people felt the same thing in Syria. Yes, at some stage something might happen, but they didn't anticipate that, I have to say, really intelligently planned attack that Abu Mohammed al-Jolani and his colleagues took.
Now, the question of his escape to Russia, maybe the world didn't expect it, but he clearly knew that the game was up and he was going to make good his escape before he could follow in the footsteps of the Ceausescu's and find himself up against a wall and facing a firing squad, or indeed the hangman's noose.
Yeah, indeed, the President al-Assad. Yes, absolutely. You may have seen, I've come under a lot of fire by talking about the al-Assad that I know and have interviewed. It's different from most people's expectation of what a vicious dictator is like. This man was a reluctant dictator. In fact, he was the second son of the old Assad, President Assad, who was in power for 20 years, utterly brutal. Actually, his son has equaled his brutality. But he clearly never really wanted to be part of the dynasty. He left Syria for England. He became an ophthalmologist, an eye doctor in a London hospital. And as far as he was concerned, I'm sure the whole of his future was wrapped up in medicine. Then his elder brother, the old boy, was coming to an end. His elder brother, Basil, died unexpectedly in a crash. And suddenly the dynasty turned on the North London ophthalmologist. He always seemed to me to be apologetic, meek, quiet, always listening to what other people said, not the kind of figure that, you know, the Stalin figure, the Hitler figure, not even like his father, the old al-Assad. And I'm absolutely clear that he always obeyed somebody else's orders. At first, it was a particularly unpleasant uncle of his, and then it was the Russians, and the Russians told him what to do. He didn't have the moral strength to stand up and say, this is wrong, I'm not doing this. I mean, for a doctor, an eye doctor, to be in charge of so much use of chemical weapons, for instance. I mean, he must have known what those chemical weapons were doing to the eyes of people that were affected by them. But he kept on doing it because he was, in the old traditional sense, only obeying orders. Yeah. People somehow don't like to think that. They want to think that he was an evil character who drove the whole thing forward, and merely to suggest that that might not be true, you know, brings you into a certain amount of
whatever about his personality and his meekness and the fact that he didn't have any moral backbone to say no to the people who were running his prisons and executing people and disappearing people, the buck stops with him.
Oh, absolutely. And it will do. You know, this story is not over. Sure, he's safe for the time being. Putin will at least, I mean, Putin seems to be really angry about the way the whole thing went and about how the Russian position has been utterly destroyed in Syria. But he's not going to let al-Assad go, or he's not going to murder him or anything. He'll live out a very, very prosperous existence in Moscow. He won't be able to live anywhere else. But there is always that possibility, and it's no more than a possibility, that when Putin dies or is forced out or whatever will happen, we can't tell, he's a man of 71 now, that his successor, there's a possibility, his successor may do what the new president of Serbia did in 2000, coming in there after war with the West and so forth, and say, well, look, one easy way in which we can show that things have changed and that we've changed is if you, the international community, want to put Assad on trial, well, here he is. You can have him.
But you think that he will survive whatever vicissitudes are visited upon him in the Moscow social scene? Because, you know, he's a bit of a pariah, I would suspect.
Oh, I think he will be, yes.
Meet Flip. She's one half of a flip-flop.
That's me!
Who got left behind at Celebration Key, Carnival's exclusive paradise in Grand Bahama.
I chose to stay here. It really is paradise.
So now, Flip spends her time lounging on the beach, swimming in the lagoon.
And eating! The only thing more impressive than my appetite are all the dining options.
Yeah, have you tried food service to your cabana?
Ooh, yum.
Flip, where'd she go? Book your cruise vacation to Carnival Celebration Key, a paradise you'll want to lose yourself in. Ships Registry, the Bahamas and Panama.
I'm sure he will. But, you know, I mean, people always seem to say it's another journalistic cliche that, you know, dictators who escape like that always seem to have $2 billion with them. It's check it out, Google it, you'll see just about everybody always seems to have $2 billion. But he probably got a lot more, judging by all his sports cars and everything. And he'll lead a very, very comfortable kind of social imprisonment in Moscow. Yeah,
with his family, who will also be confined to barracks, I suspect. Now, moving on to the ongoing war in Ukraine and Zelensky, you've met him. You've also met Vladimir Putin. And where that might go in the coming months, particularly with Trump taking over in the White House.
Yes, I mean, I have to say, I regard, if you forgive my sounding as though I'm boasting, but I regard Zelensky as a friend, as a personal friend, charming and highly intelligent man who has now done the 360-degree turn and is now praising Donald Trump and saying that he's really looking forward to the kind of deal that Donald Trump will do over Ukraine with the Russians. Well, you know, I wonder whether he's saying that in private. But nevertheless, it's a clever move to say to Donald Trump, look, we're on the same side. Just look after us. Don't just throw us to the wolves. Give us the kind of solution that we want.
Now, the question of Trump and Putin, I mean, I often hark back to that post-summit press conference in Alaska or Helsinki it was, where Trump embarrassed his own country, embarrassed himself, but didn't seem to realize it, that Putin was making a fool of him. And we reckon that that Trump is a super fan of the kind of powers that Putin has. What is likely to change in Trump 2.0?
Well, I can't see that will change, Pat. I mean, Trump does have this kind of rather unhealthy interest and appreciation of strong men of different kinds. He likes the tough guy, and he's called, as you know, I mean, you're referring to those embarrassing moments when he talked about Putin as a genius and so forth. Well, Putin is a highly intelligent and able man, but genius he isn't. And, you know, he's got interests which are wholly different from anything Trump might have. But it does look as though that relationship will flourish when Putin greets a newly elected and newly installed President Trump.
One of the things that there was much hyped on international media was the fact that the TV channels in Moscow put nude pictures of Trump's wife on front and central on their TV channels, on the front pages of their newspapers. And maybe we misunderstood it here. Russians may have been saying, wow, look at how gorgeous Trump's wife is. Wish we had one of those. Or were they laughing?
I think they were laughing. I mean, the interesting thing about the media in Russia, sure, there are 2-3 channels which are pumped out with things that even Russians find embarrassing, attacks on the West, threats of nuclear attack on Britain and Germany and France, all that kind of stuff. But there is certainly a small element of actual freedom of opinion in the Russian media. And so just this morning, I mean, I was looking at the Russian papers this morning, and they're saying what an utter defeat for Russia the whole situation in Syria has become. Now, there's something which actually, if the media were utterly controlled by the state in Russia, nobody would say that kind of thing. They don't criticize Putin, but they do allow a certain kind of opinion around the edges of it. And I'm sure that somebody just thought, hey, it'd be great to show Trump's wife and show the pictures, do a bit of stirring, you know, that kind of attitude that the Sun newspaper in Britain has. Let's stir this up a bit and see what's going and what'll happen.
Now, what of Netanyahu testifying in court, denying everything, of course? I mean, will we see the end of him in 2025?
I very, very much doubt it. I mean, he's on a knife edge politically, of course, and all Israeli politics are always fraught with the possibility that, you know, somebody will pull out of the coalition and bring it all crashing down. But, I mean, you know, many people in the West don't like it, but Netanyahu is riding very high. I mean, there he is now claiming personal credit for bringing down Assad in Syria. And indeed, there is an element of that happening. And it's a clearly been a defeat for Iran as well as Russia, and Netanyahu is responsible for that too. So, you know, there'll be a great many people in Israel who will see him as a success, and any election that's going to happen in the near future, he's likely to do very well at.
So, John, will we see an end to some of these conflicts, which, you know, in Syria, hopefully some sort of stability, at least in the short term? Gaza, Lebanon, there is a sort of peace there. And Ukraine, will Ukraine get some respite from what's been happening to them?
Well, I think, yeah, I think that Ukraine, to start off there, I think that will be, it won't be a just end to the war as far as Ukraine's concerned, but it will be an end to the war. The key thing will be, can Trump negotiate some form of guarantee with Russia that it won't come back and ask for more in a year or so's time? And that I very, very much doubt. But for now, yes, I think we're looking at looking towards a ceasefire there. In Gaza, well, I mean, that has burned its way through. And I mean, hundreds and hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of people have felt the consequences of that. But it is now gradually coming to an end. Lebanon, well, there seems to be a certain quiescence there now that Hezbollah has been absolutely hollowed out by the Israelis, and Iran is silenced. So I think we may be, after a frenetic few years, 3 years, whatever it is, I think we're now going to enter a different and quieter, but perhaps not less dangerous area of time. But, you know, as happened in Syria, there's always something just around the corner that nobody has noticed. And, you know, we can't be certain that that won't happen now in 2025.
John Simpson, BBC World Affairs Editor, thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Meet Flip. She's one half of a flip-flop.
That's me.
Who got left behind at Celebration Key, Carnival's exclusive paradise in Grand Bahama.
I chose to stay here. It really is paradise.
So now, Flip spends her time lounging on the beach, swimming in the lagoon.
And eating. The only thing more impressive than my appetite are all the dining options.
Yeah, have you tried food service to your cabana?
Ooh, yum.
Flip, where'd she go? Book your cruise vacation to Carnival Celebration Key, a paradise you'll want to lose yourself in. Ships Registry, the Bahamas and Panama.